comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the first time tonight. Hey, you know, smart thing to do, really smart thing to do. Thank you for being here. We welcome you. Tonight is K-Files E-Zine night. The K-Files E-Zine is, of course, our free weekly newsletter, and we email it. We start tonight. It takes hours upon hours to get it done. So we start tonight, and some of you will get it tonight. Some of you will get it tomorrow. But the point is, you want to be sure that you are subscribed to the K-Files E-Zine. And you do that by going over to my website, which is, of course, kevinsmithshow.com. And you get over to kevinsmithshow.com. In red letters, you will see K-Files E-Zine. Just click that. Subscribe. Takes 10 seconds or so, and you're in. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. There are no strings attached, and we don't sell our email list or rent it out or loan it out or anything. Nobody gets to use it but us. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of subscribing to the K-Files E-Zine. So be sure you get over there and do that, okay? Now, we've been getting some interesting emails. The show last night was sort of focused on trying to discover what the heck is going on with the Internet. And, you know, on April the 15th, we had significant internet outages all around the United States and Canada, and I am discovering that 18 hours prior to that, they were having them in Australia. I've gotten some reports of that. And so we're continuing to get some emails in where people are saying, you know, it happened to me too. And I really don't know what the answer is. I don't know what caused it. But when something swims in the water and smells like fish, it probably is. I'm also getting some emails about the show last night relative to the fact that I opened the show and closed the show with a brief clip of Susan Boyle singing. And this is the lady that absolutely has conquered the planet. Just phenomenal. What a beautiful voice. And what a beautiful spirit she has. And people are writing and just thanking me profusely for featuring that on the show, for putting that on the show. One said that as she watched Susan Boyle sing, it was almost supernatural. I have to agree. You know, you hear me talk about this. We pigeonhole people. The weirdest thing on this planet is us. The strangest thing on this planet is us. And one of the really strange things we do is we pigeonhole people. We do it based on what we see with our eyes and what we imagine with our not very logical brains. And when we pigeonhole people, we're almost always wrong. Almost always wrong. Boy, was the world wrong about Susan Boyle, huh? Aren't you glad somebody finally gave her a chance to show us who she is and what she can do? We'll be back right after this. right. Now, I have had a ton of email asking me to please. Let's see what I did last night. I showed just little clips of Susan Boyle singing. And I've had a ton of email asking me not to just show the clips, but to please show the whole song. So I hope we don't get in trouble for this, but I'm going to do that. And it really does have something to do with what we're going to be talking about. My guests are Aurora Light and Michael Elysion, and they're going to be joining me in just a moment. But it does have to do with what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm going to do it. Hold on to your seats, strap yourself in, return your trays to the upright position.
The dream.
I'm trained to be a professional singer.
And why hasn't it worked out so far, Susan?
I've never been given the chance before, but here's hoping it'll change.
Okay, and who would you like to be as successful as?
Elaine Page.
Elaine Page.
Like,
what are you going to sing tonight?
I'm going to sing I Dreamed a Dream from the Miserables.
Okay. Big song.
Yeah?
Yes.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by.
Well, there you are, and what a breathtaking, I would say, near supernatural performance. Just phenomenal. But you know, in the comments made by the judges, Amanda said, "I think we were all being cynical." And she said, I think this was the wake-up call, the biggest wake-up call ever. I hope so, because you see, cynical really is what a lot of the world lives with every day. We're cynical about so many things and cynical about each other. And when we hear something that doesn't really fit with the herd mentality with which so many people are comfortable, we confuse the difference between it's something I never heard and it's wrong. See, different doesn't mean wrong. There are so many things you have never heard that are dead on. And on this show, you hear a lot of things that people around the world, some people will say, that's goofy. But they're dead on. And time shows that. So Susan Boyle, you know, she spent her life having people discount her and not give her a chance, not give her a break. But look what they missed. Look what the world lived without for 47 years just because of being cynical and pigeonholing people. And on this show, we don't do that. On this show, all of us get a chance to say what we think. I'd like to welcome back to the show Aurora Light and Michael Elejian. Are you two still with me?
Yes, we are.
Hello there.
Hi. I don't know if you got to hear that song, but wow.
That was very impressive. I wish I could hear it without all the, you know, all the applauding behind it, because, I mean, she was very special.
Yeah. Had you seen that video clip?
No.
Well, you want to be sure and do that. You can, that video clip that we used is actually, it's YouTube. So maybe we're not in trouble because they put it up on YouTube. So that was from YouTube. But anyway, see, the deal is she's 47 years old. She's never been married. She lives in a small village with her cat. And her story is she's been bullied a lot and in her life, and she's sort of been kicked to the curb a lot. And when someone finally gave her a chance to just be her, look what we got. Unfreaking believable.
A beautiful, beautiful voice.
All right.
Very inspirational, very lovely.
Now,
I think there's a lot of talent out there, people with a lot of talent, a lot of wonderful abilities, who have, you know, been kicked to the curb. I think that society is extremely unsupportive to people who just want to express their individuality, but because they are so unique and talented, many times there's jealousy and there's envy, and people wind up not giving the people around them the hand up. Instead, they kind of push them to the curb and kick them to the curb and say, oh, out of jealousy, I think, and envy many times.
But I think we're going into a time where individuality and uniqueness is finally going to be more accepted than it was up until a few years ago.
Well, I hope so. You know, we are we live here in the West, and I'm persuaded it's probably true all over the world. It certainly is true in all parts of the world to which I have traveled, and that's a fairly significant part. We're society is geared toward giving all of the notice and acclaim and the benefits to the pretty people. And but look what you get back in return. You get Britney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of inspiration is Britney Spears? And look, she may actually be a fine person, but look what we get. You know, there are qualities that everybody has. Pretty or not, and of course you expect me to believe this because I'm not one of the pretty people, but I think all of us have gifts that the world desperately needs, and what I see with Susan Boyle is if you keep just trying to give the world your gift, sooner or later, you conquer. Sooner or later, you come out on top. And
Look at 47 years old, she had the, you know, at least the gumption to go and try out.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. You don't quit just because you've been kicked in the teeth a bunch. You keep doing what you do, and sooner or later, you come out on top. But even if you don't, the world desperately needs what every one of us has, and every one of us has something different.
That's so true.
You know, let me wax philosophical just a little bit more here.
Volunteers here on Earth Embodiment, there's a list of star people characteristics that Michael and I first saw back in the late 80s when Brad Steiger published them.
Actually, I was told about them when I was on my ship. On the second time I was taken on board the Merkaba light ship in 79, I was told I wasn't going to come up on them. And actually, 2 months later, I first saw that list.
Okay. I heard a click. I hope you guys are still with me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, maybe friends have joined us.
The Star People Characteristics, the NASA Star People Characteristics.
Yeah.
And it's on the website channelforthemasters.com. Michael's going to be one of the speakers at the Sedona UFO Skywatch, as you will be. Kevin and I will be, and William Alec and a host of others. Ed Grimsley will be there with his night vision glasses, and we'll have Jose Escamilla there, and he'll be there with his latest film footages of the moon, and we'll also have Dr. Alfred Weber, who has got an illustrious background working with our United Nations and getting recognition for the UFO ET reality that has been so long suppressed. And I'd like to go into a little bit about the suppression of the media on a variety of topics. And both Kevin and I want the listeners to know, and William and Bill, Bill Alec, Michael Elijan, all of us have experienced, and Ed Grimsley, a tremendous amount of interference trying to come together to do this conference in Sedona. So we really hope you all turn out for it, because they have been blocking our emails, telephone calls now for weeks. If you have any problem reaching us, I hope that you are persistent and you find a way to let us know and get in touch with us. You go to UFOSkywatch.com, and I'm going to also give out a phone number for everyone if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
A pencil and paper. And hopefully you'll be able to get your calls through here. Well, a few lucky people have managed to sign up, and we're hoping to hear from all of you out there who are thinking about coming, and let us know your intentions that you're going to be there. Because this is going to be a unique group of people who have never been able to come together before. Kevin, with his background, as many of you know, is a very interesting background, and he's going to be on Vortex Network News coming up a week from this Saturday. Well, I don't have the date in front of me. Do you, Kevin?
No, I don't.
Okay, a week from this Saturday, folks. Kevin Smith will be on, and
it's the 25th.
About his background and what he's been privy to, the knowledge and the information that all of us would like to know about, but we're not getting in mainstream news. We're just not going to get it. We have to go to internet news, and like you said, Kevin, they've been playing around with the internet, pulling the plug on things, messing around with phone calls. We've tried to reach you, Kevin, for almost a month solid without any luck at all. And you never even knew we were trying to reach you.
No.
All the emails and phone calls.
No. I got no emails from you, and there were no phone messages. And I was sitting here in the studio writing some notes for what I had intended to do this evening. And the phone rang today, just today, and it was you. And that's the first I've heard, you know, in weeks. And I just assumed that you guys were busy putting the conference together and just didn't have time to call me. So I didn't think much about it. But I had no idea you'd been trying to get in touch with me.
No, I kept telling Ed Grimsley when I'd get him. And I'd say, Ed, make sure Kevin knows we're trying to get a hold of him, and we need all his information for the website for the conference. And over again, you know, we'd email and call you. And, you know, in here all this time, we thought you were getting our calls and our emails, and you never got any of them.
No, I never got any of them.
And back has bounced, so who intercepted them? That's the question, folks.
Yeah, well, see, I have discovered, though, Aurora, since you and I talked, I've put out some emails to various other people where I'm doing things with them, you know, projects with them, and I put out some emails and asked, you know, have you been trying to get in touch with me? And I've had two more people say, yes, we've been trying to get in touch with you. Where have you been? So...
Yeah, well, that's what they've been doing to Michael and I for 25 years.
Yeah, well.
And I want people to know that this conference is a unique group of people who are telling it like it is. These are people who have had experiences out of the ordinary with human appearing ETs, and our book, Prepare for the Landings, goes into that in detail of some of our experiences with them. We have more volumes coming out. So Michael, you know, has firsthand knowledge about what you're talking about, Kevin. He's been experiencing it for years, and so have I.
Yeah, and when I look at it, like, when there's interference to this degree, you know you must be hitting a sensitive nerve as far as the power elite, the cabal, whatever you're going to call it. And so it just confirms the importance of our work. And these forces don't seem to get it, that when you create controversy, people want to know more about it. They want to know more about what's going on rather than being put off. Those who are perseverance, it only makes us more determined, gives us more strength, and we must persevere and push forward. And I'll calling in higher forces as we can, that we'll get some backup and support here more and more as people who come together, who, as Aurora said, are very unique. And this is what's freaking out these forces, that we're bringing together a unique category of a lot of people who have a lot of different aspects, but it's all kind of like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. When you bring the jigsaw puzzle together, you create some very powerful transformations by that information being aligned.
We have a break coming up here in about 20 seconds, and let me just say this. You know, I have lived where this was normal, where it was normal to have all your communications interrupted and intercepted. It was under a communist regime. They called him Slobodan Milosevic. Didn't know I would run into that here. We'll be back right after this. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. We had to cut away for a break, and I made the statement before we went away for break, and I want to underscore that. I have lived under communist regimes, and this sort of interruption of free flow of ideas and free flow of information was that was to be expected. They did that. But I think there are people in this country who don't know that it does get done to some of us right here in the red, white, and blue land of the free, home of the brave, USA. But it does get done to us. All right, now, Aurora and Michael, we do have that upcoming conference, and I do want to encourage anybody that has any interest at all in anything having to do with UFOs, extraterrestrials, that sort of thing. You need to be at this conference. It's a great collection of speakers. David Sarita is going to be there.
Oh, yes. That's right. David Sarita, of course. He's very interesting. He has worked with a lot of the anti-gravity free matter kind of stuff that Bill's involved in.
Mm-hmm. But now, you mentioned today that you had some sort of new or update information about some UFO information.
Well, yes. We have found out that there has been an extreme amount of interdimensional activity going on lately. Many, many people are getting the orbs, and you're going to speak with Bill Alec in the next hour,
mm-hmm.
and he is one of those people who has also captured these orbs recently by camera.
Mm-hmm.
And these orbs and these rods, as Jose Escamilla talks about,
mm-hmm.
it shows in his film Rods.
Yeah,
and he'll have that there at the conference, and we'll be showing that as well. And these rods and these beams, they're really letting us know now that they're around us and they are here to help us, that there is divine intervention available for people. And, of course, it's the Mutual Admiration Society in some ways. We have to behave in ways that are appropriate for a light worker. I'll volunteer here in Earth Embodiment. Before, I was talking about the characteristics, and I was wondering, those of you who have the capability to look at the characteristics while we're talking, you could let us know if you identify with those star people characteristics at channelforthemasters.com. That's Michael's website. And they're all listed there. And those of us who are here as volunteers, we're here on a mission. We have a purpose here. We volunteer to come into Earth and Body because this planet has for so long been suffering. It's been suffering at the hands of Luciferians who have been controlling it. And this is about to end.
Yeah, these forces were the same ones, of course, who instigated the false flag of 9/11. But, of course, instead of it ending up like they thought, it became a wake-up call for everybody to take a look at how the hidden agendas of these forces. And now those forces are coming to a close, and that's why they're desperate. That's why they try to screw with phone numbers and Internet stuff, because that's the only thing they can do. They can't do the big things like they used to do.
They want to block the consciousness movement.
Right.
They don't want us to have this higher awareness of who we are, why we're here, our life's true missions and purposes. They don't want us to become aware. That's why they cut down our DNA from 12 strands to 2. They genetically altered this race here on Earth so that they could control them, manipulate them more easily, the reptilian race. Who uses the grays, of course, as their slaves.
One of the things I'm going to be doing, since I actually was the first person to actually officially talk about it in 1981, the vortexes of Sedona, I'm going to be doing, starting up a series of vortex tours, and helping people get activated. When you're in the presence of the vortexes, you really do, and with the higher forces overshadowing this process, really can tap into not only the interdimensional aspects, but open up your own what we call gifts of the spirit that have been shut down and dormant. So coming into the energy fields of the vortex, it activates your DNA RNA, which also, when I do my personal transformational sessions with people, this also, on a very strong personal level, helps to really activate these latent abilities and help you plug into the source.
You know how science would say we're only using 17% of our brain? Well, that was true a while back. But in recent years, there's been more and more activation of the brain taking place in people. And they're restoring their 12-strand DNA through their higher self. Their higher self is... their spiritual self is bringing this energy through and helping to have a reactivation of the spirit into the body, into the mind, into the emotions, And we're starting now to be able to touch on our potential much in a much more, I would say, a holistic approach now. It's a bringing together a fragmented personality into a whole person. And we've all been so extremely fragmented for so long. Our spiritual natures have been disregarded in school, as for the most part, and our individuality has been discouraged. Our creativity has many times been not encouraged in any way. Just now people are waking up to the fact that they are walking around in this beige world, and they need to get into the technicolor awareness. And they need to come in. In fact, that's one of the things you can do for yourself right now, folks, is start using color therapy in your home, like having bright, light colors around you that help and awaken the chakra points of your body, playing music that is soothing to the spirit and awakens the spirit, you know, not new age music that's out. Many times very good for that. And as well as symphonic, which has been noted to raise people's IQ by 10 points, just listening to symphony music every day.
You know, you mentioned New Age music, Aurora.
We can use color, and we can use sound, and we can use sound to block out the harp and the harp broadcasting.
One of the things about New Age music that I find very interesting is anything that has the name New Age on it just draws all the condemnation and cackles and howls from the same crowd that attacks anything that has to do with UFOs. And
They can laugh at it all they want, and they can make fun of it, the establishment, all they want, trying to hold on to their status quo of country clubs with little white balls and martini glasses. Okay, they can try and hold on to that old paradigm where the rich all sit around on big, fat, overstuffed chairs, sipping their martinis all day in their golf clubs, while the poor all scramble to serve them. But that's not going to be the reality of the future.
Oh, most definitely not. Most definitely. I made the statement on several shows. I may have even made it on the show where you were with me previously, that the old paradigm, the one that was in full swing even up, I think, through last year, is dying. It's in its death throes. You can see it, and it's going through convulsions as it dies. And those that are in charge of that paradigm, as you say, they don't want to see it go away, but it is going away.
There's two fractions out there, one that wants to bring in the New World Order,
mm-hmm.
and the other one, which is going to be a socialism through and owning companies and owning the companies, and controlling the companies, the large companies. And then there's another fraction out there that wants to maintain the old status quo. But these two fractions are warring right now. What I think is really truly going to emerge is neither.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what's going to emerge is the human spirit is going to rise and triumph, as it always has.
So do you think that their plans to put together a one world or a global government, do you think that will come to pass?
No, I think, their plans have been to create a one-world fascist dictatorship, but because of this planetary frequency shift that's been going on and with higher forces from other worlds coming around the Earth in guardian action, and because a lot of us have woke up, many people woke up some of us, like myself, have known from the time I was born that there's going to be this shift, because there's been such a massive shift in human consciousness, and we've reached out and asked for higher forces to intervene. They, because of such a large percentage, they are mandated to step in now more overtly and influence us, overshadow us, help us, and neutralize the forces who've been opposing our freedoms.
We know that America, which has a destiny to be a leader of the world, should not make its number one export war toys. We all, common sense tells us all that's ridiculous.
So what do you think will replace that?
Countries around the world, and then after we sell them all we can, then we go in and attack them.
Well, what do you think will replace it?
It's like the Avenue of Americas that recently changed their name, where they teach people torture and all kinds of horrible things.
Avenue of America?
Well, no, I mean the Academy of America.
The Academy of America.
Yeah, it's Fort Benning, where they, there's a number of people speaking out against it, and that's something besides, the setting down Oliver Grove and some of these other places. There's got to be an ending to all of the military,
covert military
right.
operations must come to an end.
Well, we also, because when they set up the national security state, that was to keep everybody in the dark while they keep the power and knowledge for themselves. And it really is time to quit thinking of things like, well, this is a threat to the security or whatever.
I heard when Obama took office, his boys and Bush's boys had the little showdown at the OK Corral there at the White House in the Oval Office. There were five of his boys and five of their boys. There they were, having their little showdown there in the Oval Office as Obama came in and Bush was leaving. And Bush's boy said to him, don't try and do anything to undo what we've already done. Don't try and undo anything we've put in place. Because if you do, it could get really bad for you. And then Obama's boys came back with, if anything happens to anybody in our crew, we're going to make sure your crew is taken out.
Okay, now, how serious are you about that information?
I am very serious.
How good is your source?
It's an inside source.
Well, it would not surprise me. Politics is very much like sausage. It's best for most of us not to see how they make it. But
unless it's good organic natural chicken sausage.
Yeah. So I hear that Bush's boys threatened Obama's boys and said, you better toe the line, and they came right back at him and said, anything happens to us, you guys are coming down.
So, well,
leave us alone. We'll do our thing, and we'll leave you alone.
Speaking of coming down, you and I have to come down for right now. We've got a break, and we'll be back right after this, folks. Welcome back. My guests right at this moment are Aurora Light, Michael, and Michael Elegion. In the next hour, Michael will be replaced by William Alec, who is a researcher, among other things, a researcher into anti-gravity, and we'll be talking about some of that. This paradigm... People talk about it being a paradigm shift, and I think sometimes people think it's sort of like a crossfade in video or in music, where one just sort of fades out and the other fades in. But that isn't the case. That's not how it works. How it works is one dies as the other one is emerging or being born, and the paradigm that's dying doesn't want to die. The people in control of that don't want that to go away, because that's what that's their power base. And so it's going through convulsions right now, and it's in its death throes. One of the big areas where you see that happening is in energy. The Tesla auto manufacturer, Tesla Automobile Company,
yeah,
now has a fully...
talking about that next hour.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to say this, though, about Kevin, about where we're at right now while Michael's still here. Michael has regular contact, telepathic contact, as well as he's had physical confirmations about what's to come here. And I'd like him to get a chance to be able to share a little bit about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, this is, for me, you know, when people always say, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? This is this reality of extraterrestrials coming to this planet, something I knew from the time I was born. I think it's important for the audience to understand, Aurora and I are both are what is called contactees, and we're not abductees. There's a difference. Both of my experiences of being physically taken on board these higher-dimensional light ships, the Merkaba, as I refer to them, which actually are part of the Federation of Light that surround this planet in guardian action. Both of these instances were, I mean, I didn't want to come back. It was like beautiful beyond most people can imagine, but the feeling, the love, and the incredible compassion these beings have, their technology is the same level of their compassion. Some people on Earth may not understand that from a very mundane point, but for me, in having contact the first time at 6 years of age, when I fell off a pier in Oceanside, California, I mean, that was a very terrifying moment. I'm falling off the pier. I got my
You were 6 years old.
6 years old at the time.
Yeah.
One moment I'm falling, next moment, boom, they had physically taken me back aboard the Merkaba, the light ship. And I met my extended cosmic family, part of the beings that I had known before this life. Now, these beings were dressed in silver blue metallic suits. But had they been dressed in Earth clothes, you would have thought they were the average good-looking person down here. But the intended thing about it was that their love, their compassion, the fact that they intervene, which I realized later, this was written into my life script. I was going to have these experiences that were important because it not only did it verify the memories I had carried with me, actually was born without all the veils over my mind, but also the fulfilling of a promise. We who take earth embodiment here, earth embodiment, have a protection and guidance. And so they took me aboard because this was also part of my mission to awaken people and to prepare humanity, as in our book, Prepare for the Landings. Go to prepareforthelandings.com. Aurora and I authored this book, which really does prepare you, not only because of Aurora and I having personal encounters and experiences, but it also was confirmed in their physical presence on these higher dimensions that they are going to definitely openly intervene here shortly at some point. And so these experiences were important because it verified this divine intervention on a personal level, which will then occur soon on a planetary wide scale.
Michael goes into a lot of this information, and so do I in other areas, too, on our radio show on Achieve Radio. I hope you don't mind me mentioning that we're on Achieve Radio.
It's all right.
.com. And that it's the Vortex Network News lineup on Saturday morning. And all our archives are free. And I interview everybody. I just will have on Raylan this Saturday. She'll be talking tomorrow. She'll be talking about her husband's involvement in the secret space program and the war in space and ETs and everything that she knows about as an insider. And Michael has the cosmic connection where he gets into the ET reality with her. And I'll be talking about where she thinks we're going right now. What course she is, having been an insider for many years, married to two men who were insiders in the secret space program. And so She's going to be an interesting guest. Bill will be talking to her about that on the technology, Progressive Technology Hour. He'll be talking to her about the suppressed technology that's been going on all these years. So it'll be three rocking hours. And I invite everybody to check us out on Saturday mornings live, or if you don't have time to do that on Saturday mornings or whatever time it is, whenever part of the world you're in, you can go to the archives, as I said. So, you know, Kevin, you have a fascinating background, and Michael knows of this reality of ETs. How did I, you know, since he's been a little boy, and we're finding more and more people who are willing to come forth like yourself and say, like Michael, and say, this is a reality, folks.
Yeah. As time goes on, we are finding more and more who are willing to step to the plate. But, you know, there is a very deeply ingrained fear that many people feel. It is a fear that has been installed by the old paradigm, a fear that they are going to ridicule you. But see, that's what's behind it, Aurora. That's what's behind when I say people who think you don't matter, don't matter. They have nullified their own value when they try to nullify you. And if you get that mindset that, you know, hey, I matter, and people who think I don't matter, don't matter. Well, you get that mindset, you can step up and say what's on your mind.
Making them fear the ET information or ridicule it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know,
fear.
If someone wants to ridicule me, I don't care. Because when they do that, they are nullifying their own value. Let me put it another way. I'm 6 feet tall. If I step on someone, maybe they're 6 feet two, and I step on them and I force them down, it doesn't make me any taller than 6 feet. I'm still 6 feet tall. You don't get any taller by standing on people and stepping on people. And so when someone tries to ridicule or to nullify your value, they're not any taller. You know, it didn't make them bigger. And they just don't matter.
Dr. said, I feel so much taller when I'm stepping on someone's face.
There are people who feel that way, yeah. Yeah. But they're not. They're not more important. They're not taller. There's not anybody on this planet that's more important than yourself. Just be who you are and be what you are, and the world will benefit.
Well, Michael's been stepping out about this human appearing ETs for many years. He was trained in the Edgar Cayce fashion by his father, who was a professional stage hypnotist. He could put 50 people under, you know, in a matter of a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael showed signs of being a channel, so his father worked with him and helped him develop into the channel he has become today.
And then after that initial type of readings I did for many years, similar to Edgar Cayce's, they were very karmic. Since I always knew I was supposed to be a cosmic telephone line, in 1979 when I had my second encounter, when I was taken aboard under another very life-threatening situation, at that point aboard the craft, I'll be brief here, they activated my DNA RNA and told me from now on that the sessions, these transformational channeling readings that I do, would be for the others like myself who would come on missions here. They also told me about this list of star people characteristics, as it were mentioned earlier. And when you go to the website, channelforthemasters.com, you'll see those lists that represents the amount of energy that your soul brought with you that affected your DNA, RNA, genetic code. So my sessions are designed to plug you into your mission, help you get inside, activates. They put these higher-lighting codements on the tape. They have me actually on an energy beam from the Merkaba.
And you'll be doing readings for people at the conference.
Right. Mm-hmm.
As well as Vortex Meditation Tours on Thursday and Friday.
All right. A break is taking over. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Aurora Light. In the first hour, Aurora Light and Michael Elejion. And I understand that in the second hour, we will be joined by Bill Alec. So let me make a real quick announcement, and then we'll go back to the telephone line with Aurora and Bill. Don't forget a couple of things here. Don't forget to go over and subscribe to the K-Files e-zine before the show is over, because right after the show, we start sending out this week's edition, and it's free. All right? You'll like it, so subscribe. So go over to kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files e-zine, subscribe. It takes about 10 seconds, and then you will get this week's edition. Also, the music that you hear on the Kevin Smith Show is 100% independent artists. Some of them send their music directly to me, and some of them we get from two different services, GarageBand.com or Music.Podshow.com. So you can go over there to either one of those or both of them and fill up your iPod with great, great, great independent music. All right, let's get back to the telephone line and Aurora Light and Bill Alec. Bill Alec is a researcher into anti-gravity and other he's many other things, but that's one of the things he's been involved with. And he joins us this hour. Is Bill with us?
Hello, Kevin.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Bill's with us. He's also the director of the Progressive Tech Center, and he has been working in anti-gravity and free energy research for many years, and has interviewed people around the world on that subject.
Well, we're delighted to have you back with us, Bill. I believe it was about 6 weeks ago, a month ago, something like that, you were with us. And it's good to have you back. Now, you're going to be speaking at the conference in Sedona.
Yes.
This is on May 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And what are you going to be speaking about, Bill?
Well, I'm going to be speaking about suppressed technologies, and especially the suppressed technologies related to the control of gravity. And the control of gravity, according to my research, has been known since the 40s, 30s and 40s.
Really? That far back?
Yes.
So are you saying then that we now have that we have anti-gravity aircraft or spacecraft now?
I'm sure we do. And I think that's what we're going to see during the conference.
Yeah, Ed's glasses, you can see this war in space going on very clearly.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, Bill, you said this goes back to the 30s and 40s. What indicates that to you?
Well, there's this very interesting literature that popped up, discovered by the name of researcher by the name of Joe Farrell. You may have had him on the show.
Yeah, he's
Joe,
been here.
He talks about the Nazi Bell device. And the Nazi Bell device is a anti-gravity machine developed by the German Nazis towards the end of World War II. And the documentation that Joe presented in his books indicates very clearly that the German Nazis were developing anti-gravity or doing research with anti-gravity and actively demonstrating it.
Now, when you were on with us before, we talked really in a lot of detail about that Nazi Bell device. If I remember correctly, you told us that they had actually flown this thing, that it actually levitated.
Yes. Yes, there were witnesses. What they used to build this technology were, of course, the people in the concentration camps. And he built these concentration camps near their weapons factories. You know, there's top-secret weapons factories. So they had an expendable slave labor force, okay, to build their machines and to keep this information top secret, you know, the expendable side of those camps.
Mm-hmm. And so what happened with that technology after
the
war?
Well, at the end of the war, it was discovered that there were eyewitnesses, okay, from these camps that observed a craft or this experiment, this Nazi bell device, lift off the platform and hovered, okay, above, their experimental platform that they were working with there.
Mm-hmm. There are also reports, and I don't know how credible these reports are. I've seen them for years, but I don't know how credible they are. Reports that the Nazis successfully built and flew what today we would call a flying saucer or a UFO, a saucer-shaped craft, with people in it, you know, the manned craft. You know anything about that?
Well, you know, it's not a far stretch to go from the Nazi bell device to a saucer craft.
Yes, in fact, Bill has a theory about Roswell that I think is very interesting.
Yes, well, the Roswell crash was described as from Corso's book, The Day After Roswell. He describes a series of technologies, okay, that came out of that crash and were transferred to American industry. And curious enough, anti-gravity was left out of it. But curiously enough, the technologies that were transferred were technologies developed by the German Nazis towards the end of World War II. I mean, for instance, laser technology. The German Nazis had developed lasers, but not only lasers, but tunable gas lasers. And they used it in their uranium bomb project. And the Nazis had developed a means by which to detonate a uranium bomb, which the American side really couldn't do towards the end of the war.
Why didn't they use it?
Transfer.
Why didn't they use it in the war?
Well, you know, that's a very good question because according to Joe Farrell's research, they developed tons of this yellow cake material, okay, which is this purified weapons-grade uranium. They had tons of this stuff. They had a means to detonate it, okay? They had a very special detonator technology that they had developed. And what they lacked was a delivery system. You know, they had this huge bomber, this Junkers aircraft. But according to his research, they did not have a means by which to deliver the bomb and drop it. They apparently they were working on a bomb bay system towards the end of the war, and then of course the war ended. But there was a technology transfer that occurred at the end of the war where they transferred the means by which to detonate a uranium bomb, okay, to the American side. And there's a rather interesting story behind
that. Also, when the craft that was found in Roswell was described as having Nazi symbolism all around it.
Right. Yes, that's the curious thing about it. And the technologies that, of course, Corso mentioned were technologies developed by the Nazis.
And I was wondering, you know, are the Greys Nazis? Where did that come from?
Well, they,
and
you know,
so apparently they took the technology from the Greys gave them the technology. The Nazis having really no morals to get in the way of them doing their deals, did a deal with the reptilians and got the Greys as their slaves as part of the deal. And the reptilians, I hear, promised them all kinds of assistance for Rothschild and the others. Rothschild was a Nazi as well as Rockefeller in the Bush family. So, you know, the reptilians promised him immortality, and the, you know, according to David Icke, the Queen of England is a reptile as well. And, you know, God only knows. So,
yeah, but now wait a minute. When you say the Rockefellers and the Bushes are Nazis and the Queen is a reptile, at that point,
well, according to David Icke in his research.
Okay, according to David Icke, then.
And his research is pretty good.
Well, yeah, but debatable, just like anybody's research.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't want to give anybody the impression that there's any rock solid evidence. There are people
everybody
who
has to decide for themselves,
yeah,
if they believe that or not.
There are some pretty good researchers that have put together some evidence, but I haven't seen anything that's rock solid yet.
Well, we know for sure that Grandfather Bush was a Nazi.
He did, in fact, donate money to the Nazis. That's true.
Yeah.
But, hey, so did
IBM.
So did Henry Ford.
IBM actually wrote the codes that read the numbers on their arms. Okay? Developed the computers to do it, to read the numbers that were tattooed on their arms.
Okay.
Okay, and so, and Rockefeller, there's ties there to his company interests and the sales of arms to Hitler, as well as, if you look at Rothschild, now there's an interesting one, all right.
All right.
When I was living in Detroit, I was about 22 years old. This friend of mine who was a Yale graduate in international finance and I were playing commodities. And I was doing very well with him. We were making about $30,000 a week in profits. And it was happy times.
Yeah.
Anyway, one day he said to me, when he was dropping off my commission check, he said to me, and I was playing it psychically with him, I might add. So anybody out there who's got some investment money, wants to play a little psychic roulette, let me know. Anyway, I'm very good at it as a rule. And he says to me one day, he says, I got some people I want you to meet, because he knew I was very political. And I said, who are they? He said, well, they were in the underground during World War II. They helped Jews escape from France.
Mm-hmm.
And they are related to the Rothschilds. And I said, really? And she says, yeah, and they're concert violinists, excuse me, the mother, the father, and the son. And the son played in the Detroit Symphony. And he was like my age. And he says, I want to introduce you to them. And I said, I'd love to meet them. So over we go. And I said, so tell me about the underground in World War II and what you did. And was there anything extraordinarily unusual about anything that took place? I'd love to hear about it. He said, well, you want to hear a story? I said, yes. You know, I've always been an investigative reporter, even when I was a kid. So they said, well, okay, here's one for you. The mother, was related to the Rothschild. And they used to go over there to the big Baron Rothschild's mansion and ask for money and pretend like they were really, really poor and they needed money for them and their friends and relatives and stuff and get as much as they could. But they really used it for the underground. But they couldn't tell him that, because they knew he was tied into the Nazis. So they'd go over there about three or four times a year and do their begging. And so this, they're and they're ushered in by his butler, and they're put into this little library. And there's a dumb waiter that connects the room next to the library to through this dumb waiter. And the Baron came in, offered him something to drink, and then some liqueur, and then went into the next room to meet with his friends and said he'd be back in a little bit when he was done meeting with his people. Well, them being spies, they wanted to know who he was meeting with. So they carefully lifted the dumbwaiter door on both so they could peek into the room next door. And there they saw a meeting with the reptiles, actually reptile beings. And they were shocked. And they were talking about immortality, and then they found out they managed to pay off one of his servants and found out about the room downstairs where he did all his black magic. With the reptilians and everything, they got to get the full scoop. So apparently, these reptiles are interdimensional.
All right, now you're saying this is Baron Rothschild's. These are family members that told you this.
Yes, of the Rothschilds, and she was a cousin, and she told me that they were flabbergasted by this. Seeing these reptiles standing on 2 feet, talking with them, ugly looking things, and they said they were just freaked out. They couldn't believe it. Of course, they didn't let on that they knew anything. And and I'm listening to this. I'm 22 years old. I never heard about reptilian beings before, and I was just like, okay, well. Great, it was nice meeting you. Thank you for the information. Wow, what a story. And out I went. Never saw him again.
So what do you think looking back on that?
I thought about their story. And then I met a girl who got a reading from Michael. And she says to me, and she was in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And she says to me, I got a reading from from Michael Elejon. And I was just like, blown away by his reading, but I have to tell you something about my mother. I said, what's that? She says, well, when I was a little girl, my mother killed her boyfriend and buried him underneath the chicken coop in the backyard, made us kids clean up the blood and bury him. And she said it was a very shocking thing to have happen, and I was about 8 years old. And she said, then my mother became a lesbian and did all kinds of unconscionable things in front of us. And then, when she got older, all us kids left as quick as we got older, we all left the house as quick as we could and got away from her. And she said when she was in her later years, nobody in the family would ever speak to her, none of the kids. She was the only one who would drive her to and from the doctor. And one day she's driving to pick her up at the corner to go see the doctor. And there, she sees her mother's face as a reptile looking at her. And she's going, what am I seeing? And people are walking way around her mother like they could feel the energy as they were walking down the street. They were like circling around her. And as her mother smiled at her, her face went back to normal. When she's laying in her hospital bed, her mother, again, she shape-shifted into this reptile being right in front of her. Her face just turned into a total reptile. And it blew her mind completely. So that's the second time I heard about the reptiles. Then, David Icke comes out with these books. So it really makes you wonder.
Well, you may have heard this story. Shortly after the Katrina hurricane, I had as a guest on this show Joe Montaldo, who has a group that researches and investigates things having to do with UFOs and having to do with extraterrestrials, etc. And shortly after the Katrina disaster, he was contacted by some guys who were in the National Guard who wanted to report to him what had happened to them. They were on patrol, wading through the water, and they come upon these two upright reptiles walking through the water. And they unshouldered their guns, put them in a ready position, and started to approach the reptiles. The next thing they knew, they were walking away from the reptiles with the guns slung back over their shoulders. And they just looked at each other. Neither one of them remembered what had happened or why they were walking away from these reptiles. And they turned around and looked, and the reptiles just walked off, and it really shook them up. And they called him and reported what had happened to them. And I asked him, I said, well, how much credence do you put in this report? And he said, well, I think it probably is true because I had a group of New Orleans policemen that reported the same thing happened to them. So
I'll be darned.
You know, it looks to me like that. I mean, you've got National Guard soldiers, you've got police reporting the existence of these things, and then other reports from people all over the world. It would seem to me they must exist.
About the reptiles, it's because Bill is talking about the Nazi Bell and the secret. In the secret, program that they have, and the scientific knowledge that they secretly have, do you not think that these Bushes, these Rothschilds, these people out there who are control freaks, who are trying to control everything here on this planet and gather as much wealth as possible, while they rape us and pillage constantly? Okay, do you not think that these people would be working with these reptilians if given the opportunity?
Well, I think anything's possible. The question I've got, though, is why would these reptilians want to work with any of us? They could obviously just take over and do whatever they want to do.
Because we would rather die than work with them. We would all kill ourselves and leave.
So you're saying that because they don't want us all to die because they need us as slaves, is that it?
They want to farm us, our genetics.
I see. Well, that's not very encouraging, is it?
They're doing the abductions and farming our genetics. The Greys are their slave race that are impregnating women, taking the fetuses, doing the interbreeding technique.
All right, we have to take a break. Unfortunately, it always happens right in the middle of something really interesting. We'll come back to that. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This hour we're talking with Aurora Light and Bill Alec. Bill, let me ask you a question about the anti-gravity free energy research. Now, we talked about this when you were with us before, but based on your research, how far do you think we are from being able to put to use in a commercial sense, in other words, that I can use it here in my home or in my studio, this free energy technology? How far away is that?
Well, I think it already exists in the black op world. okay, free energy, anti-gravity devices, and I think they've been in the black op world possibly the past 60 years. And there's very little doubt in my mind that there exists a black ops space fleet. And I think it's operating today.
As well as black op underground cities.
I mean, there's just very little doubt in my mind now.
It's catacombs throughout the whole United States.
Yeah, they're way over 100. I think 100 and something between 123 and 150 deep underground military bases that have been reported. I'm not saying that I know that to be a fact. I'm saying those have been reported. And there is a tunnel system that connects them.
Just a couple days ago, who told me he watched as they moved in every night a great big semi truck to this house and began unloading the stuff into it every single night for months and months on end.
Tell them where this was located.
And I am about to. And it was right next to the Enchantment Resort, which I heard they tunneled all under there. Everybody in Sedona said that the whole Sedona was covered with black ops and when they were building this thing underground. And then
well,
when they got done pulling in the semi-trucks and unloading them every night for months into this house, they tore down the house, covered up the hole, and you'd never know it was ever there.
So what do you think it is, a base or a city?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've heard about that for years, that there's a secret military base.
Under Enchantment. And I'm in that mountain there, that huge mountain. They have a device now where they can actually, like they did on the World Trade Center, how they brought that building down, turned it into dust. Bill, why don't you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. I had a guest by the name of Dr. Judy Wood.
Yeah, she's been here.
Heard of her.
She's been on the show.
Yes, and I had John Lear on my show last week. And, you know, when you start putting all this information together, the 911 was essentially a black op operation. And they used space platforms orbiting the Earth, okay, to shoot down those towers. Those towers were brought down by this technology. And it completely, Judy Wood described it as something like a disintegration of the material. You know, it's very
and that's what they
technology.
Do when they go bury into the underground. They can disintegrate the material.
Okay, now let me play the devil's advocate here on the World Trade Center
that's
thing.
That's what they do with the UFOs in space. They disintegrate the material.
All right, let me play the devil's advocate here. Why would Osama bin Laden come out with a tape and say and take credit for the World Trade Center if he didn't do it, knowing that we're going to fly missiles up his rear?
What'd you just say? I didn't hear you.
Why would Osama bin Laden come out with a videotape and take credit for planning the World Trade Center thing if he didn't do it? Why would he take credit for it, knowing that we would fly missiles up his rear?
Oh, that's all black ops videos. That's a joke.
Okay, so you don't think that that video of Osama was real?
No, that's just an impersonator, probably.
And so you don't buy any of the thing about the 19 conspirators that. Flew these airplanes, took over these airplanes and flew them and all that.
First
you don't buy any of that.
When it hit the World Trade Center, was there any pieces of the plane scattered throughout Manhattan like would be a normal? Absolutely not one piece of the planes were ever found.
Well, you know, I became very suspicious of 911 looking at the Pentagon building, you know, the blast at the Pentagon
they
building.
They faked those pictures of the planes hitting the building.
Okay.
That was no
when the planes had hit the building, just think about it for a second, how it would just be this incredible debris just flying everywhere. But it didn't happen that way.
Well, I don't think they faked the pictures because I was watching the news and watched an airplane fly into it on video, live video.
You think it was live video.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually being fed to you.
That was CGI.
See, the news you're getting isn't real news.
Oh, I know that.
People in the news.
I know that. I know for sure if it's in mass media, you divide it by 10 and maybe be near the truth. So, but okay, so what hit the World Trade Center? Because we did see...
Nothing hit it. They hit it with a particle beam.
Okay. And you're saying that's from a space platform?
That's why it wound up in dust.
Okay, and you're saying that particle beam was from the space platform?
Yes. Yes, according to John Lear's research, a particle beam was used to take down those buildings.
Okay, so who would be in charge of doing that, and what would be the motive for doing that?
All right, let me tell you the motive. Those buildings were about to be condemned. Those buildings were about to buckle. They used airplane material to build them because it was lightweight,
mm-hmm.
and it was starting to buckle, and they had to bring them all down, and they didn't want to take the loss financially, so they blew them up. And they also thought it was a good excuse to bring in the New World Order. It's a double whammy. Double-edged sword. The buildings had to come down because they were improperly built. And they didn't want to take the financial loss for it. So they decided, well, we blow them up. Then we can say, you know, it's covered by insurance. We can make the insurance companies pay off on it. And... you know, and then they didn't have to admit their failure as builders.
Okay, so,
The builders who built it didn't have to take the hit.
Okay, but how do builders have access to space platforms?
Well, who do you think gets contracts for the World Trade Centers? Do you think that just anybody gets the contract?
Well, I don't know. I don't know who built them.
Certain key people get the contract.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, who has access to the space platforms?
Behind it. You research backwards.
Okay. Well, I know how to research. I know how to investigate.
Exactly. And so whoever had the building contract for World Trade Center probably had the building contract for the space platform.
You think?
It's probably related. If not cousins, best friends, Yale grads, you know.
Well, that gives me some material to research, I'll tell you that. Now I'm going to have to see who built the World Trade Center and see if I can trace that back.
Yeah, now we've got to figure that one out, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Because that's, you know.
What I recommend the listeners out there to do is to Google Carol Rosen. Description of her meeting with Wernher von Braun. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And that's where he talks about the false flag operations, and she talks about the space platforms that are up there.
I've seen that.
About from Carol Rosen about the space platforms, mm-hmm. and then from Judy Wood about the shenanigans that went on.
The exotic technologies that they have.
Yes, these covert projects, you know, are unbelievable what they're doing nowadays.
Okay, well, eventually, though, in that chain, I would think you would eventually have to get into very high ranking military and very high ranking government officials in order to have a space platform involved in the destruction of, well, anything, but in this case, the World Trade Centers. I think if you follow that trail back, you assuming the facts that you're presenting, and you follow it backward, you eventually are going to have to get into high-ranking military and high-ranking U.S. government. Do you go that far? Do you say that's it?
You know, we're going to have to follow the trail because I'm not going to predict who it's going to lead to yet. If I was in the prediction business, I'd be over at the racetrack. You know, but I'm not in the prediction business, but I am in the reality business. And if this, whoever this leads to, it leads to. But we know this much. There was no plane debris scattered throughout Manhattan.
Well, also, and Bill, you brought this up at the Pentagon. Now, that's really fishy at the Pentagon. None of that damage that...
Well, that's when I became very suspicious, you know, that, you know, there's a major con job going on here.
Tell them your feelings on what really took place, Bill.
At the Pentagon?
Yeah.
Well, when I saw it on TV, I mean, there was no commercial airliner that went into that Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, just looking at the hole in the Pentagon. Okay, no aircraft could have caused that. And for a
because
while thereafter,
it was too small.
Well, afterwards, there was a lot of talk that, well, you know, maybe a missile hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that a missile was launched and blew that hole in the Pentagon. And then last week, John Lear comes on, and he says, no, it's not even a missile that caused that. And when you look at the explosion, okay, that was actually released, okay, by the, you know, the officials over there in the Pentagon, they released some the explosion that went on. That's a gasoline explosion. You know, that wasn't caused by an aircraft.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll come back right after this, and we'll pick up right there. All right, folks, don't go away. Welcome back. We're talking with Aurora Light and Bill Alec. Bill, you were telling us about a gasoline explosion, and I want you to be able to get that in before we run out of showtime.
Coming back on.
We're on.
Yes, John Lear brought that to my attention on last week's Progressive Tech Hour show. He mentioned that there wasn't even a missile. You know, a missile didn't hit the Pentagon. You know, they just had this scattered debris around there. And what they did is that they were showing this weird explosion that was released some months after 911 of what looked like a huge fireball. And John Lear says, well, they just took a barrel of gasoline, just lit it. And that's what caused that explosion in that released video.
Well, what caused the damage to the Pentagon?
Well, at the time, I always thought it was a missile.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just an explosion that they did with a barrel of gasoline.
Well, I saw the damage to the Pentagon, and not on TV, but with my eyes. I saw it from a distance, but I saw the damage. And a barrel of gasoline won't do that damage.
Mm-hmm.
Something penetrated into the third ring of the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, I always thought it was a missile that slammed in there. And the debris, if you look at the debris that was photographed, you only see one engine. And that engine was not from a commercial airliner.
No, that engine's from a missile.
Way too small.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the engine was way too small. And I think they correlated that engine to a certain type of military weapon, you know, some sort of a missile.
Yeah.
And I forget which one it was.
Yeah. Now, the damage to the Pentagon penetrated, you know, the Pentagon is in five rings. And it penetrated to the third ring. And a barrel of gasoline won't do that. Something punched a hole in the side. But I'll tell you this.
I think they did put some kind of explosive there.
Well, it's also been told to me by more than one commercial pilot that you could not fly any commercial-sized jet that close to the ground, that fast, and at that angle of descent, and get that kind of a penetration into that building. They say you just could not control the jet that close to the ground.
Right.
At that speed.
Right.
So, you know, I buy that it's not a jet. I don't buy that it was only a barrel of gasoline. Something penetrated to the third ring.
Something in between.
Something in between. A gasoline-powered missile, huh?
Yeah, you know, that brings up a question, though. You know, if they're lying about that, okay, that, you know, they're telling you that, well, this commercial airliner slammed into the Pentagon, and you look at it, and common sense tells you that isn't so. You know, they're telling you a lie here. Well, what else is a lie?
Okay. Exactly. So when people come to the conference in Sedona and they get to meet all of us,
right.
You get to meet some authentic people for a change, telling you the real truth.
Well, that's true.
We're
almost out of time. We've got about
a few
minutes left. Give us the web address.
When they are awakened on so many levels, we have some outstanding presentations planned for you people who come and see us. May 22nd through the 24th at the Creative Life Center, the gorgeous multi-million dollar Creative Life Center. It's fantastically beautiful. And it's a refuge for, you know, intelligence and wisdom to be passed on. It's a great place. I know you people will love it who come by. And we'll have good food for you there, nice healthy food for you to eat for the weekend. And I've got special accommodation prices from motels around Sedona. Some really good deals. They're giving you some recession prices. And we've got tickets available from $5 for the films and $20 to the Sky Watches to, you know, very inexpensive all-day passes, including meals and everything. So it's going to be quite a lot of fun for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
All right, tell them where they can get their tickets.
I think in coming together, we don't even know how fantastic it's going to be because there's never been a group of people brought together like this before.
Aurora, tell them where they can get their tickets.
They go to UFOSkywatch.com. And there is everyone's bios, and you'll see the hotels and the accommodations are there, as well as the Creative Life Center. Or nice, you can go to Creative Life Center, Sedona Creative Life Center. We're there on the calendar listed there, and check it out. It's just gorgeous. Yeah, there's not another place in the world like this that I've ever seen.
All right.
It's really beautiful.
The very first event takes place on the evening of the 22nd, right?
Yes.
And that is the Sky Watch with Ed Grimsley.
We open Friday night
mm-hmm.
With a some music, and well, and we're going to open with some movies, and Ed's going to do the Sky Watch that evening, and we'll have some food there for everybody. And then on Saturday morning, at the speakers start, and we'll have speakers and lunch, and speakers and music and films and sky watches in the evening Saturday, and again on Sunday it'll be the same. So it'll be a full time. And then if on Monday you want to do a vortex tour or get a reading with Michael, that'll be available Monday, Tuesday, as well as Thursday and Friday beforehand. So you can spend a full week there if you're able to cut loose for a couple extra days. Do so. I highly recommend it. Those rates have never been lower at the places to stay there. I remember last year they were double what they are right now. So take advantage of it, folks, and come on by.
All right. I want to thank you, Aurora, and Bill for being with me this evening, and Michael Elejian, thanks for being with me. And I
just invite everybody to tune in to Achieve Radio tomorrow morning.
Yeah, please, folks, do tune in to Achieve Radio in the morning. There will be a very interesting show with Aurora and with Raylene, and some talk about secret space program. We've talked about that some here on this show. All right, now, what we want to do, folks, what I want to do before we get to the end of this show is to underscore that this conference is going to have a ton of speakers, lots of different speakers, people that you want to meet, people that you, and you will get to meet them. You'll get to meet them in person and get to hear them. And these are people that you've heard on my show and on other shows. David Serrata has been on this show. John Lear has been on this show, but I don't know if he's coming to the conference. But that sort of information is what we're talking about. So be sure you check it out. It's UFOSkyWatch.com. Thanks for being with us. We're going to have another fantastic week next week. And I hope you'll be here for that. Gotta go. It's time to get the K-Files e-zine out. I hope you have subscribed so you'll get this week's edition. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.